not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people around the planet are realizing, perhaps, celestial beings have visited this planet in eons past. Are they still here? What the heck's going on? We have a man of the hour who graces us with every program, who probably knows more about this project than anyone on the planet. That's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
How are you doing? We haven't spoken since last week. How are things?
Things have been pretty quiet. Everything's been to be going along, you know, including some of the predicted weather problems, and some interesting things have come up. But mostly it's has to do with Celestial's present perspective, as they have given it to me, as they look upon our planet and the project Urantia.
Well, we all pretty much can, you know, I was going to use an old expression, and I won't. I guess what I was going to say was many of us can be awfully pessimistic sometimes and look around at the world and see utter misery and the insane selfishness, and just everything seems to be going bad sometimes, and it's hard to think that maybe we're on the edge of a millennium, on the edge of, not a millennium, but the end of an age, so to speak. But then that's what we're here to talk about tonight. Folks, you can send your DJ emails into dj@artistfirst.com. We'll try to read them on the air. And Michael, let's toss the topic of tonight's program to you. What would you like to speak about this evening?
Well, actually what's been moving along is the celestials have been watching intently the manner in which we are now undertaking many of the problems in our world, especially looking at the example in Japan, where they're, you know, one of the greatest natural catastrophes in recorded history has just rocked Japan, and what they are doing about it, and the unique process that is happening globally and in the change of consciousness that has been moving about in the way they people are helping them. You know, at one time people would think that just throwing money at a problem is enough. However, in the case where you have a productive society losing their, many of them losing much of their productivity or the tools of productivity, productive resource, how things are coming about in those manners is finding a new, more interesting way in which I guess you might say the old bankers are not able to get in, because some of these people will never meet the banker's requirements, and you know, for a loan or for, you know, starting up a business that got totally smashed. And what's happening is this tremendous amount of influx. What I heard is it's, you know, nearly $1 billion of promised money that's coming in from people just want to help out. And what's happening is it's being funneled into a type of investment donation scheme where, you know, if let's say you gave a, you know, sizable amount, let's say maybe, you know, $1,000. Let's just use that as an example. And what 500 of that would go as far as a donation, and another 500 would be to a selected, you know, business investment and upstarting a business, and that business will take that as part ownership. It's like nearly like a very different form of a stock market, because you actually own this promise, and when the business gets up and running, it'll actually pay back a dividend. Because there's a certain kind of nature about people is that when people just take a handout, they lose a lot of self-esteem. And then the handout tends to just go backwards, and the end is they're worse off than when they started up. When people have and maintain that dignity and pride of ownership as well as sharing success because of teamed effort, the success is much more likely. As these kinds of things continue to happen, you're seeing that businesses are actually getting up and started and moving out, and their product is moving out into around the world in different ways. And it's very interesting how that is happening, because this is something that's relatively new, because, as I said, the banks have been saying no because they're stuck. The liquidity problem is worldwide. And in this case, there's other funds that are coming in which are not necessarily from the bankers. And this is something that is very important, because if the bankers were truly the gods of this world that make and break the world's system, then it'd be a terrible thing. And as a matter of fact, what's happening is they're losing much ground right now, which is one of the important aspects of what is the turning of the age all about. You're going to say?
Oh, something just came on. I was just hearing a commercial. It's like there's gremlins in the system. I was going to ask you about, they seem to be making progress on the Greek problem of Greece not defaulting or coming to some arrangement. Do you feel that that problem is any better this week than it was a week ago?
Well, it's, it's got two faces to it. One of which, of course, is that the problem is that the Greece government wants to say that we want to remain solvent. We're going to try to develop source of funds, and how they do that is go back and tax the people, and their property tax, I guess, is something that is going to be one of the sources of their income, and one of the reasons which will allow them perhaps to get a bailout of sorts, or which will keep them solvent. And of course, the idea is to keep these countries from defaulting one after another. If they're small enough, they can be like Iceland and just bounce back and just be completely out of the system. But because of the nature in which it's intertwined and interacted through, throughout this euro system, euro dollar system, they have that feature, that responsibility to at least show good faith, And that's what it amounts to. But of course, the real impact is right down to the grassroots people, who are going to get kind of angry on increasing their property tax when they can't even make money on the property they own. Maybe much of what is the resources over there, the economy in Greece is a lot of tourism, a lot of visiting, and that's down also.
That's right. It's not cheap to take a cruise to Greece these days.
Yep.
If you guys want to get in on the conversation this evening, you're welcome to hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. We'll read your questions on the air, and I hope we've had a backlog. A few of our machines failed. Did you ever go through one of those periods where everything breaks at once?
Well, that can happen, and that's usually the case of some of the problems that come up when you're on the grow.
Well, we have had quite a few growing pains and machine failures the last couple of weeks, so thank you for the patience our listeners had in us getting up the Urantia shows. I believe they're all up and everything's up to date now. You rely on this technology, and then when it doesn't work, it puts you behind in a hurry. Well, a lot of the people were worried that if Greece failed, then the banking system fails. If the banking system fails, the world plunges into chaos, big time. So, there were several other countries that were teetering. Is this just get a new name now that these guys they settle the Greece deal? Now will we just be talking about Portugal or? Well, what was some of the others? Was it Ireland that was another country that was teetering?
Yeah, that's the Italy, Ireland, yeah.
Is this just going to be an ongoing thing for years to come?
Yeah. I'll tend to have a stretched out kind of a problem, I believe. And it really amounts to an entire change on the basically the profit-fed banking system built on debt. The debt engine, of course, is limited in its ability to grow. If you could grow debt infinitely, there would be always solvency in the system. But because debt has its limits because of the concept of the payback, then it would have limitations. And, of course, with those limitations come liquidity. And the liquidity problem is one of the things I was speaking to the Celestials about right now. As a matter of fact, they were mentioning, you know, I'm just kind of parroting right now just what things they were talking about to me. Now, one person, individual, actually.
Well, I wonder, you know, the Celestials having these infinite lifespans, I wonder how many times on other similar planets they've seen this happen. Are we a unique... is our civilization turning out in a unique way in regards to the way our banking system is controlled by a handful of families around the world and incredible wealth and power in the hands of a very few people and teetering on all these disasters? Is this unique to our planet?
So, Helen Sharun is speaking now. The response to that question is that it is not unique. The system in its original form and its basic design is to unify and help a society grow. Of course, the diseases that come within it that has been pointed out through our teachings, which have found their way into the global religions and philosophies, do point out the importance of keeping away from these base profit motives. The lack of knowledge on the initial intent of the development of life and its higher courses, the ascension process, is one of the failing points within much of the understanding about why the system fails. Presently, we are watching, indeed, as I have spoken to your voice, who has lent me his mind. He pointed out that indication earlier of changes in which even philanthropic giving, goodness, is now in fact becoming much more like the system in which many planets function economically and cooperatively. Each planet, once developed an economic system globally, using that term global, for all unique systems sovereign within their sphere, use systems not much different from what you experience, but with many, many choices that are made on a higher priority, not just profit. Profit will remain and is good when its primary function is to expand. And you understand that even the very substance of the universe and its role presently and its move presently is continual expansion, never to remain stagnant, small, finite, but rather to grow to the infinite. Your voice, whose mind I borrow, did mention debt. Such a thing has reality in many other systems. But again, it has not been used divisively as it has here. I spake here for your planet Dronsa. If you are to see even greater prosperity as this age does turn, and as indications are showing, that the importance of this civilization to become a member of the universe governance continues its progress ahead, ascending to higher calls, higher values. We will make as many suggestions, I use that word carefully, suggestions versus interventions. For most of the time, suggestions have found their way toward solid, proper choices, even in the cases of war in the past. They have helped turn society toward a movement away from settling such disputes, economic as well as in society's overall culture. Rancha is a mixed with so many, with a uniqueness that comes about in so few worlds, especially Rancha's unique choice to become what it can and will become, a very high and tall civilization, unique in many perspectives, only if it becomes one in which unites under the banner of goodness, not the banner of any country, sovereign or otherwise. Because if such things are to become more important, wars will always come about. If sovereignty of a country, nation, people, families or individuals are threatened, this higher goodness cannot propagate fully. Once it propagates, as this turning of the age moves, consciousness on your planet toward a higher call, more volunteers from our area, both spirit and material, will find their way into helping the higher good. These are the ways in which we intervene. But we make this suggestion that you understand that the system in which is in place must go through transition and cannot remain solely as a system of debt and slavery. Sharon spoke. Okay, Z-Man, just a comment, I believe.
And if we fail to follow the celestial suggestions, do we need to fail? Is failure an option? Can we rebuild if we fail, or will this be the end of civilization?
Sucks, Sheldon. Failure is always open in areas even in which we prefer that failure not come about. It is permitted. In systems which have gone through very similar encounters, including war, including poverty, including desolations, have over time found their way toward the higher truth and call. Their systems remain and are able to function for the better of the mortals of their land, extending their prosperity, knowledge, wisdom, science and understanding and philosophies further and further ahead, extending their lifespans even more than even you can perhaps calculate, which you will attain. These lifespans are not because the limits of life growth on the planet has been reached and no more new come about, therefore the old must be retained. No, it is because there is room. Once you know, there is always room for more. This is the thing that has happened in some of these other worlds, closer to than you think. We, the Shaduns, are watching you. We have in our course a high level of telepathic influence. Yes, we give you suggestions. And those who will hear us and do will find a way to express these suggestions in your life society, whether it be in creative invention, culture, arts, politics, many ways they will find a way to be expressed. Your voice, the voice that I'm borrowing right now, whose mind I share, did witness us in such an event. He saw us as we are, and with our purpose. Therefore, remain in the tomb. And for whatever it may be, and however it may motivate you, continue in that resonance. You will find success. In this way, we, Ashiruns, will continue in fostering, enabling, even prospering many of you to continue in your life the project of higher destiny attainment. We guardians of destiny, as the Uranchivo calls us, remain steadfast, hard on our task and loyal to you. And we, eternal in our motive and our life, are servants to you who do not know that your perspective of finite life is really untrue. Continue, therefore, in residing on the planet with resonance toward our mind, which we will share openly with you. Isa, salut.
That was
probably better. His name is probably more easily understood as Isaac Sharon.
Isaac Sharon.
But he saw, so I guess something like that, yeah. But it's like, Sharon's are what he said they were. So anyway, you get the idea, I believe. He was trying to explain some of that.
What's it like to share a mind with a celestial?
It initially started at a very remarkable sense of... he demonstrated it to me first with my request to touch his head. And when he stopped and he said, do this, and I realized now I was part of him and I was controlling his hands, and I could actually feel tactically his hand touching his head, and I realized that I had a mind-sharing experience. And that was one of my very first experience beyond telepathy. So mind-sharing is a higher call than telepathy, which is sometimes limited to distance. But in this mind-sharing event, they were also aligning me. I believe that might have been the actual reason for me having to physically come to their location for an adjustment. And this was confirmed by Nella when she told me that they had gone deep within my brain and made some changes. And I would never be the same, but it would be... I would lose some things, but I would gain a lot more. So, anyway, I'm the result of that right now. So,
they have a little shoebox full of parts left over?
I think they may have added something or found some way in which they had resonated. Also, I believe that happened to Nancy Leader, because we both went with the Zeta type, not the Sharun, the Zeta type, and we went back into... sit in kind of a nice comfortable chair, something like a dentist chair kind of deal. And from there, I was told that it wouldn't be hard, just as long as I wasn't afraid, stay still. And I just did some thing that didn't seem to hurt me at all. But according to the Zetas and according to Nancy herself in her testimony, she had a painful time or a frightening time enough, and they had to knock her, put her into a catatonic state, sort of, and they did the adjustment for her. So she also has a resonance too with perhaps a different group.
Yeah, just thinking about that, some of you listeners are thinking about those experiences that you guys went through, and I wonder if our minds and our personalities are strong enough. I did, for instance, one of the gentlemen who was I've spoken to, who claims he was also on the ship with Riley, said it was not a pleasant time, and he did not want to talk about it, and he wanted to forget about it. So maybe the trauma to him was
too great,
just too much, more than you can handle.
It was probably one in which he was unable to receive their, or willing to receive their psychic embrace, And as a result, he stayed within himself. And it is terrifying if you stay within yourself. Once you move, you know, once we get, we're encased in a mortal body with limits and limitations, and we realize that we need to protect ourselves, our bodies, our minds, our consciousness, our personal will and sovereignty. These things need to be protected for some reason that we go through a tremendous amount of stress to protect and keep ourselves intact. Also, there are times in which, you know, when it comes down to, you know, intervention by some buddy or something, as far as risking it all, I mean, that's another story. I mean, you know, to live life more fully. However, what changed me from being exactly like that, because in the initial stage I was terrified, but was Anila, Anissa Vaughn. She had basically gave me an infusion of love and peace and absolute trust, and no problem. There's no problem. Whatever, your people are just fine to me. In fact, I want to be like you, and that's the exact thing that I'll never forget, and it's always that. I always want to be like them, because they have this ultimate level of, not ultimate, but it's a level of attainment that they're trying to help us achieve.
Well, I was listening to the Celestial talk about how our current global economy is based on the profit, and suggested that instead of looking at things about what's the most profitable way to do something, start looking at things, what's the good thing to do, what's the best thing to do. And you look at the banking industry, you look at certain governments. Hey, how about those dictatorships? They do a great time doing good. It's just so many, so powerful. How in the world are you ever going to convince those people, the current people that have the power right now, that, you know, if you've been one of those scumbag Wall Street traders that's been ripping people off for decades, it's just going to be standing in the shower one day and go, oh, gosh darn it, I owe all these people back money. I just get kind of pessimistic that outside of utter collapse, I don't know how to change anything. These people are not going to willingly change.
Oh, no. I mean, it's something that they're not going to be willing to change. It's obvious. As a result, to them, when it does change, their world will essentially end. It will be the end of the world for them. Many of these people, you know, will think that there's the world has ended.
Well, not so far. But
not so far. But, you know, there's, again, there's the world is not static. It's always under change. And, you know, recent changes, even with the political administration of Russia, you know, has become something less than democratic, I believe, right now. And although democracy in its form is really not necessarily the most perfect way, but it's one of the better ways. But the the idea that I've seen in recently that Putin has just basically kind of become a dictator.
Yeah, he just said, forget all that freedom stuff.
Yeah.
You guys can just get on out of here.
A failing, really, which reflects the idea of freedom and the idea that freedom would provide the kind of economic progress, democracy and freedom would, that they hope to participate in. Well, the China model is also one that is different. It seems to have its own tilt on the idea of the good. And they haven't as yet realized the internal purpose of life. So they're just looking at it from preserving a society point. But when it comes down to the ultimate truth, this is where the celestials will continue. However, one of the interesting things about both Russia and China is they have many unique and very, very wide open, you might say, UFO displays, tremendous shows that come up before some of these places and cities where these people are just being woken up to a higher realization. And that realization, of course, being that they're, you know, we're not alone, and then they're becoming more and more aware of that. And this is something that tempers their society. And one of the things that even the leaders like Putin will find out, that as much as they want to control society, the society is much more aware, especially the youth, the educated side, and the ones that are truth seekers are aware that there's a lot more involved here than just the running of a country or the running of even our planet. There's much more going on, just simply because of the massive displays, and it'll continue on an escalating scale until there's, you know, basically a crescendo that goes on. And I'm not sure exactly when, but it's continuing to happen. But it's moving, you know, it could very well be 2012, sometime, late 2012 or so.
Hey, I think there were some people that were talking about that date one time, 2012. One of the other engineers that works here left me a handwritten note, and it's kind of long, but he wanted to bring up these points on tonight's show, so I'll abbreviate this as best I can. But he writes that there's an exponential growth in social media technology combined with global UFO awareness, and he writes a pandemic of possibilities leading to genetic modification, population explosion, and depleting resources. And I guess this is the point. Is Armageddon essential to save the planet and save man as a species?
Armageddon is a battleground, which is given a place and an idea of the use of a terrible device killing a lot of people, and that's out supposedly in the, you know, the fields of Megiddo, Armageddon. And it's really talking about a battle, a final battle, not a global catastrophe. It is located in the Middle East, in the backyard of Israel. And really, if you look at the contention of the Middle East, and how they feel about Israel, it makes all the sense in the world that Israel would be the one to press the button. Recently, I received what I call a light vision, one in which is not so detailed or very, very, very interactive, but one in which I had the view of like a spy satellite, one in which was looking and zooming in on what appeared to be a technical installation, having the feel of nuclear plant. And it was also, I believe, placed somewhere in the Middle East, I believe, probably Iran. And the intention looks to be as if to disable it. And it's not to say that Israel hasn't disabled Iran's nuclear ambitions before. They've done it before, you know, and they are quite ahead of the game. However, I don't believe that they'll be ahead of the game of keeping their neighbors' nuclear ambitions to destroy them at bay forever. Ultimately, there'll come a time in which the threat moves closer to them than they'd like to have it, and one in which no amount of negotiation will save them from the idea of completely annihilating Israel. And these go back to almost nonsensical hatreds, and one that have been built into culture, which are some of the hardest things in which is to uproot. It's a very deep root, a tap root that is being tugged on by the celestials to pull out, but it's having a tough time to come out. So it may require, yes, a centralized Armageddon type experience, localized, that will suddenly wake up the planet as it shows itself. I believe the earthquake, also spoken of in the Book of Revelation, that never has been since the world has recorded history, ever been, already happened, and that was the one in Japan.
Well, I think I speak for at least a few listeners out there. I'm 52 years old. My entire life, I have heard nothing but the struggle between Israel and the struggle between Palestine, the PLO, and it's just enough already. You know, maybe the rest of the world should, just like two kids on a playground, they should say, okay, we're going to force you guys to stop this nonsense. You know, maybe, of course, yeah, with politics, wouldn't it be nice if we could just use peer pressure as a world to make people act the right way? Well, we got a couple emails I want to squeeze in that have come in. And first one says, Dear Michael, young people of Earth love your views on Artist First Radio. Can we, Artist First loyal listeners, meet you in 2012? And do you have any comments about human visible language? I think that's visible language. I think it's a typo. So take it away, Michael.
Well, in the time to come, perhaps, you know, ultimately find my way to the public view, but it's not the purpose of which, I'm here. You know, I don't, like Z-Man says, I'm not here to profit from my research of my book, because I don't have research. I have actual first-hand experience, and then I try to give as many of you who would believe it, first-hand experience of when gaining information from the celestials themselves. You find me just an ordinary person, with just perhaps one unique adjustment that has allowed for some of these things to happen. As far as this common language, vibratory language, there is, in my travels around the world, I've found that there are certain very common aspects to language. And there's not necessarily do you have to speak the language of the land to be able to get perhaps an idea across, although a combination of many things, if they get more and more sophisticated. But ultimately, the language that are in place out there culturally are, you know, common to many, and language of music, the language of motion, dance. These things are, of course, incorporated into culture, but they, of course, move past language. So, yeah, there's another level of language that will be incorporated shortly, one of a higher vibratory resonance and an understanding that comes because of that. And it would be probably because more people will be resonating with the celestial mind, and because of that, that common understanding which would come forth because of that translation, through the you know, the midpoint, the higher mind that we would share, would make that language perhaps more common.
Did you have any reaction to the news that I think it was the people at the CERN laboratory have conducted, was it 2,000 or 20,000 tests, where each time they claim that they have subatomic particles moving faster than the speed of light? This will turn physics on its head.
And this is something that they will have to ultimately figure out, because it's one of the things that they will end up finding, not the guard particle, but the fact of higher than speed of light motion or travel. This is something that approximately will happen around 2012 also. And when this happens, the time-space continuum which we are locked into will again change. And that will allow for a step into the realm of a higher dimensional space. And this is the way the celestials work, because they function in motion through trans-dimensional propagation. They don't stay locked into our time domain, and that's very important. They move in between it, you might say. When I asked the question about it once, and all they gave me was, like, I was walking in one of these ancient Greek temples where they got just columns and columns and columns. And then when you're off to the side, you can't see through it. But when you just get right into enlightenment, then you can walk right on through it. It's wide open. There's all this space in between. And basically, they just gave me that image in terms of telling me how they use this transdimensional property, which they de-link from time lock, space lock, essentially, which keeps all matter in sync, in unity. And they're able to move in between, and they retain and are material physical beings, able to manipulate, carry out tasks in even in our domain and dimension. So this is something that I'm waiting to have more than just this observation, but there will be a real understanding coming out shortly.
Well, I suppose one person would be most surprised would be Albert Einstein, because it was his foundation and that nothing could ever exceed the speed of light. Yet, from what you're saying is, oh, yes, it can. So I think Einstein will always be regarded as the great genius that he was, but he hasn't been right about everything.
Well, it's not that in his perspective it was correct, but He did account for more, but he was unable to get the one idea, the one concept that would lock everything together. As long as he kept that in place, velocity of light.
So. That would be an interesting question to ask the Celestials. Is there, does the master equation exist? You know, that, like, they're trying to figure out the theory of everything. Wasn't that a little bold when we know so little about so little? You know, we know about this little tiny corner of one galaxy. It's the only place, and now we're going to come up with a formula that explains everything? Come on, that just seems ridiculous.
I just have a kind of a tug that the Celestial sort of kind of tugged at me and said, don't get into that. I don't think there's enough time for it idea. But if I get into it, it's all right, you know, but if the Celestials move into it, I believe they would want to have a better time component.
Perhaps that would, if they would care to join us next week. We always love hearing from them, and if they have the time and would like to join us next week, maybe that could be a topic of conversation.
That would be like, yes, they agree.
Well, that sounds terrific, and we are just, I don't know how to describe the honor it is to have them on this program and allow our humble platform to be one of the ways that the word gets out there of what in store for us and what their suggestions are, and it is a great honor to have their grace us with their presence.
Well, I'm sure it is. They're not going to say much. I'm sure they are quite happy. They go to a kind of... can you imagine these people all dressed in purple, and they go into this very quiet state, and they propagate their heart to you and their mind. So really emanates from them is kind of like a embrace of love and peace.
Well, I sure hope things, you know, I hope we're going to, unfortunately, I think we're going to see what's going to happen. I think we are the generation, people living today. And of course, everybody has said this every generation before us, but I honestly believe it. And I think there's a lot of listeners that do too, that it is that time. That it's not something we're talking about hundreds of years in the future. We're talking about maybe a few months down the road, maybe a few years, but.
Well, I think I personally, I feel that it's a few years in the making. I mean, it's not one sudden event. It's, you know, we're seeing it right now. You know, I mean, there's global changes going on in terms of consciousness, how people have a global consciousness, and the idea that technology links us together. I was pointed out by the celestials that things that they have as perhaps part of them in their higher mind, and many of them and develop themselves higher to a higher level, really we have enabled for ourselves in terms of our technologies, which in terms of our, you know, new communication level, our information level that we have right now. So that is creating a global mind in itself, as everyone is able to share over particular topics and ideas, really have a global consciousness because of that technology.
Well, we're out of time, although we're never out of time to say that Michael does this program because he told his celestial friends he would do this program. He is fulfilling his word, something a lot of people don't seem to do. Michael has nothing to sell. We do not accept any advertising on this program, and Artist First funds the program out of our meager coffers here. We are delighted and honored to do this program with Michael, and every week, Michael, I just want to thank you on behalf of our listeners for doing the show with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And look, I wanted to mention this too. If they're going to have another stimulus, which I don't know if they will or they wouldn't, I have an idea. Why don't you give every person in America that filed a tax return last year $10,000? Or $1,000. This is totally doable in the amount of money they gave the bankers, because all the bankers did was give it to each other and we never saw it again. But if you gave every taxpayer in America $1,000 or $5,000, they'd go out and they'd spend it. They would instantaneously infuse the economy. But okay, that's just my dumb idea. Thanks for tuning
in. Balance just right.
Yeah, but, you know,
people won't throw it in a bank account and forget about it.
They're going to go buy something with it. They're going to rebuild the economy because they're going to get every business in America going, because it'd be a huge cash flow for us little guys. We're so blessed to have you guys tuning us in each week. Thank you, Michael, for your participation, and thank you for allowing the Celestials to speak with us this evening.
You're welcome.
Artie Kornfeld Show follows the CBS News. You're listening to Artist First Radio.